Okay, we've now arrived at that point in tonight's program where questions from the audience will be fielded by you five. Those who wish to ask questions, if you would come to the microphone, try to address your questions to whichever panelist that you'd like, and try to keep the question succinct and not make a speech. Starting with you, Glenn.
I will try to do that, Chris. I'd like to direct this first to Casey, but then to the rest of the panel. I like what you said, Casey, in your very first comment, that this is draft legislation. So I'm going to propose a change to it and try to get your response. I'd like to expand this discussion to how PLI relates to climate change. To me, the extraction aspects of PLI look like they're a business-as-usual carbon plan. Climate scientists tell us that we are heading for disaster if we follow that plan. To put it in very local terms, in the lives of our grandchildren, snow levels at 9,500 feet, irrigation ditches on the east side of the county probably dry by early June. That would devastate the economy of this county. So my proposal is that we completely sequester all carbon in the PLI initiative. Climate scientists say we need to keep 80% of carbon fuels in the ground if we're going to prevent disaster. So would you accept that modification to the PLI?
I'm more than happy to give you my email address and you can send it my way. You know, the PLI only works when people recognize that no one is going to get everything they want, regardless of where you look at this. You know, David's unhappy. Many of our counties are unhappy. The day before this rolled out, I had a county commissioner tell us on the phone, we're out, we're done, you sold us down the river. So this process only works when everybody realizes there's a give and take. I'm happy to look at that proposal and look at, I'm sure within that paragraph or longer that you're going to send me, I hope, there will hopefully be that give and that take.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the panel on that?
I'd like to jump in on that. I think this goes to what I was talking about, this being a fossil fuel development bill. Again, Casey said, go to their website, look at their maps. Their map won't show you this map that I started the discussion with, 2.5 million acres dedicated to locking us into a path to exacerbate climate change. It's terribly problematic. And that is the vision of the Public Lands Initiative. It's business as usual. It's accelerating business as usual.
I'd particularly like to hear from Cody on that, because the governor's office, I think, is heavily in favor of energy extraction.
You know, there was a great article a few weeks ago by David Brooks. I'm not sure how many of you read or like David Brooks, but he wrote a piece on politics and in his estimation, the sad state of politics today. But he had a great line that really struck me. He said that, and I'm just paraphrasing, but he said that a mature politics is one that recognizes the existence of other people. And the reason why that struck me is because, again, as we debate this issue, again, that's a very fair, legitimate perspective. You're not the only one who's raised that. You're not the only one who's articulated that position. But I am afraid that, again, if we were to take it seriously, we would be completely ignoring the 30, 40, 50, 60,000 people who live in the Uinta Basin, who have a very different perspective, whose livelihoods today, tomorrow, next year, for the next 5 years, depend on the fossil fuel industry. And if we were to say, hey, guys, sorry about that. Sorry about what you've been doing for the last 20, 30, 40 years. Sorry about the historic homes you have there. We're just going to ignore you and say you're done. We just can't do that in politics. You know, I think that's not showing them the respect they deserve. Is there a question? Is there a legitimate discussion about how we transition to cleaner burning fuels? Absolutely. I don't know if the PLI is the best vehicle for that. You know, that was not the goal of the PLI. Mm-hmm. Even when we sat down with SUA originally, I think they didn't think, well, this is a way to limit carbon emissions. That was not the goal. Again, we want to make a decision with that in mind. We understand that there are issues related to carbon emissions. But I think there are probably more direct ways, more fair and balanced ways to address the concerns you raised than through this bill.
I won't dominate the discussion anymore. Maybe we can talk at 9 o'clock.
Thank you, Glenn. Next, please.
As it happens, I'm from the Uinta Basin, and I wanted to point out what I think is an irony that I haven't heard anyone discuss, and then let whoever wants to address it. I live in Vernal, and obviously Vernal is falling on hard times. We have a lot of tough years in front of us. and I don't know how that's going to play out. But we do have, on our eastern horizon, we've got Dinosaur National Monument, which is a big draw. And it's not going to support the Uinta Basin by itself, but it's part of our economy. So when the PLI came out, you know, I was pleased to see that it was included as wilderness. But I read through all the boilerplate, and in the PLI, it says that the National Park Service is going to lose its authority over grazing. And they are going to freeze the level of grazing at the current levels. Can never be increased. I mean, it can never be decreased, but it can be increased if the state of Utah deems that that is possible. So I find it very ironic that the centerpiece of tourism for the Uinta Basin is losing some of its protections, where less valuable lands that are outside of Dinosaur National Monument are still going to be managed by the BLM and by the U.S. Forest Service. So I find, and that applies to every single land management designation in the conservation categories that are in the PLI. Special management areas, watershed management areas, wilderness areas, they all freeze grazing and strip the agencies of their grazing authority. I think that's a terrible idea. So anyway, I would like someone to explain to me why it's a good idea.
Okay, why don't we... Juan, do you want to chime in on that and then maybe Casey?
I make 2 points on discussion. Point number one is that Utah is about an $8 billion industry in tourism and recreation. That's a lot of money under any portfolio. Clearly, as we look at public lands, the question arises, how do we monetize public lands? I think the paradigm of the past was that the way we monetize public lands, we mine it, we graze it, we do something to it, we sell it, we monetize it that way. I think there is a new paradigm that has emerged over the last while that monetization of private land is worth keeping it as it is. Its value is in what it is. Look at Moab. Look at St. George. Their marketing strategy is from May to Zion. Look at Utah's marketing strategy for the Mighty Five. This is a big economic engine, tourism and recreation. $8+ billion for Utah. And so we need to start rethinking our paradigms in some of those local communities. That's one. Number two point is that there is some discussion, and I'm really happy to hear that Casey and Cody and others are willing to have a conversation. Some of us are willing to sit at the table and have this conversation, but the current language on where grazing is an example, that's just one example, on page 8 of the working draft, states that grazing can never go down, it can only go up. That doesn't make any sense. It's going to put those local managers of the BLM Forest Service in a tremendous conflict. They already have enough conflict as it is. Why give them more? Because what if there's a drought? What if there's fire? What if things change where you do have to do some adaptations to what's there? I would agree that those managers need to have reasonable conversations with some of those permittees, but to simply state that it could never go down, that doesn't make sense to me from a practical, pragmatic sense.
Okay. Cody. I mean, John, did you want to?
Yeah, can I jump in here for a second as well? I agree with your comments, Juan, and I think it's important to recognize that this sets up a conflict with other laws as well. If we say that grazing can go up but it cannot go down, there are other independent requirements that may dictate changes in stocking levels. That may have to occur under the Endangered Species Act. It may be required in order to protect water quality and maintain compliance with the Clean Water Act. So when we have these hard limits, it creates a problem for us moving forward. And hopefully this is an area where, as we move into the next draft of the PLI, we'll see a little more flexibility and hopefully some changes that will minimize some of these conflicts.
One quick comment, if I may, on this. And I'm not sure where the gentleman from the Uinta Basin went, but he's absolutely right. I was out there last week, met with a number of mayors and county commissioners, and they are struggling. It's a challenging issue. To Juan's point, they absolutely want to diversify. They want to have a recreation economy, but they'll be the first one to tell you that a lot of Uinta County is not Moab. You know, if there's a place in the state where energy development is appropriate, it's up in the Uinta Basin. There are areas where, again, it's as desolate as, you know, people don't ever go there. When you get there, it's pretty ugly and bleak. You know, and that's coming from the people who live there. They acknowledge that. Second point with regard to flexibility, I think that's a very fair management point, but just keep in mind, you need to be careful in that the very designation of a conservation area is very, very rigid. You're not allowing for flexibility. You're saying if this is designated as wilderness, this is permanently off limits for any mechanized use forever. That's what the very definition of designation of wilderness means. So, again, if you're going to have a hard limit on the conservation side, I think those on the other side say, well, wait a minute, we should have a few things that guarantee some results for us as well.
I think we're going to go to the next question. Thank you, Cody.
I'm a little bit short for this. I'm a longtime Summit County resident. I grew up here, went to the public schools. I am also a Navajo Nation member, enrolled in the Navajo Nation just recently. I did not understand the unique status of Native American tribes, the legal political status that they have in governing themselves. And so as Mr. Palma had mentioned, the Native Americans need a voice. I didn't know I had that voice, and I didn't know that I was a citizen of the United States, of the state of Utah, and of my tribal nation. And that unique political status that we have as tribes, and having that the intertribal coalition come forward and present this proposal is of great interest to me. So I'm very interested in that area, even though I don't live down there, because I do understand the Native American heritage of being tied to the land, that concept of property, not really owning it, of them being together as one and creating that, as well as the treaty rights that the Native American tribes have to the wildlife that are not necessarily on the reservation, because wildlife has no boundaries. And so my question is to the panel of, how does the PLI, how have they really included the tribes in this? They say that they have included them in coming forward and consulting with them, but really, is this meaningful consultation with tribes as that status, or is it more of just another stakeholder, which my understanding is, and it took me going to law school to really understand that specific status. And if it was done and there's a misunderstanding of why they have now gone to this national monument proposal, what is the approach now and how even the state supports the tribes? Because I know Governor Herbert has done an excellent job. He reaches out to them, does that meaningful consultation. Whereas from what I've read in the PLI, it seems to just ignore that and put them on that same level as a San Juan County commissioner, when the San Juan County specifically has had historical discrimination against voting, against education, to where there was a recent lawsuit. And so my question is, so they, as a Native American, coming forward and letting your voice be heard would not be done in that public setting. So I guess that's kind of just my question with that. Without that, if we are relying just on the San Juan County commissioners as that voice for us, when there's that historical discrimination down there.
Casey, would you take that, please?
I think if I would have sat on that end, no one would ask me any questions.
I got a better view of you here. I have to turn my head to look at John.
I think the intent of the PLI, especially with regards to the Bears Ears, was to take into consideration the interests of tribes. That entire area, that 1.1 million acre area, is set up to be managed by a committee, or at least create the management plan by a committee that is chaired by two tribal members, one member from each of the five tribes proposing the Bears Ears National Monument, a representative from the state of Utah, and a representative from the county. And the intent of that coalition, that group, was to give them the discretion necessary to implement the plan and create the plan for that area, to highlight tribal issues and concerns, the need for firewood gathering and the gathering of medicinal herbs, and to have ceremonies, but also recognizing that there are other folks that live in the county too, and frankly, they have to get along. There is a lot of conflict in San Juan County, and it's benefiting no one. And what we intended to do through that process was create the opportunity that the tribal voices could be heard, that the other voices could be heard, but that people had to work together to solve these problems. Now, I want to step back and address the Bears Ears proposal, because it's been a topic of discussion here, and I want to speak directly to you, ask the question. One of the things that one of the first drafts of PLI that we attempted to do was give full discretion and management authority of that area to the tribes and that coalition that I just talked about. And our drafting attorneys ruled that it was unconstitutional because it violated the appointments clause within the U.S. Constitution. So what we created instead was a chance to create a management plan and have an advisory role with the BLM. When the president designates a monument, there is grave constitutional concerns that what the Bears Ears Coalition is expecting will not be delivered by this administration because it is constitutionally not possible. The notion that the Bears Ears Coalition will manage this area and have full discretion is factually false. It does not exist. The other thing I want to push back on the tribal issue is, or on the Bears Ears issue with regards to a monument, there is real concern that monument designations will not benefit tribal interests. You have monuments that have been created on top of tribal lands all throughout the Southwest that have done nothing but eliminate tribal uses and push tribal members off of a landscape. I think folks would be well to look at the history of the use of the Antiquities Act and Native American cultures to get some context. We recognize there is a viable and important issue there, an viable important use. We hope to respect it and elevate it through this process, but people should tread carefully when they wade into the use of the Antiquities Act.
John signaled me first and then David.
A couple of points I want to make with respect to that. First, it's an open question, I think, about how tribes would interact if the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition proposal is brought forth and that is incorporated into a monument designation. It does not, as I read it, give authority to that tribal coalition. What it does is set up a board that would make recommendations to the federal agency, which would have final management authority. The idea is to get consensus between those tribal representatives and the federal land managers and the other involved parties and move forward with a consensus. If that's not available, then you go to mediation. If the mediation fails, then the federal agency has the final say, and that avoids a non-delegation problem. With respect to the way American Indians are treated under the Antiquities Act historically, Casey's right. Years ago, we didn't do a very good job, but times have changed, and they have changed dramatically. If we look at how Native American interests are treated contemporaneously under federal law and in more recent national monuments, I think we get a very telling example of what the administration is trying to do. And I just want to read you very briefly what the American Indian Religious Freedoms Act says. It says, "It shall be the policy of the United States to protect and preserve for American Indians their inherent right of freedom to believe, express, and exercise the traditional religions of the American Indian, including but not limited to access to sites, use, and possession of sacred objects, and the freedom to worship through ceremonial and traditional rites." So that's federal law. We can't move beyond that short of an act of Congress. And when President Obama designated his most recent national monuments, he has recognized that. He's also recognized existing executive orders that talk about recognition of those traditional tribal rights, and he has built more specific protections looking at Chimney Rock, which is over in Colorado, looking at access to cultural sites, spiritual rights, food and medicinal plant gathering. So there is room under the Antiquities Act to address exactly these kinds of questions.
Thank you. David?
I just wanted to provide a little context for these comments, too. I think it's important that people know the Bears Ears National Monument proposal is a proposal, as alluded to, from an intertribal coalition. This is a coalition of five major tribes that have come forward and said to either the delegation or the president, "Here is a vast area of our ancestral homeland that we would like to see protected." I think they have a very well thought out and cognitive proposal. And they decided the end of December, the very beginning of January, that they felt discussions were going nowhere with the delegation. They cut off discussions with the delegation saying, "It's clear you're not going to do what we think is necessary to protect this area. We're going to the president now." So I think it's important everybody understand that these tribes themselves think the monument is the way forward now. And in terms of Casey saying, "Well, you know, I don't think the monument will protect what they want." Well, These tribes are composed of adults. I think they have a good idea of what serves their interests best, and they're pushing for a monument now. And they've, like I said, they felt that the PLI is not going to resolve their concerns.
Thank you. Next, Cody.
Sorry.
There's not consensus. And you know, the single elected county elected official in San Juan County, Navajo tribal member, she is opposed to it 100%, and a number of her constituents are opposed to it as well. So I'm sure Juan would say the same thing. You know, even among your group, AHO, I'm sure there's people with this disagreement. It's been a very delicate, challenging issue for the delegation when the people on the ground who live in Utah, who they talk to, who again who have elected this county commissioner, say we don't want it. So trying to navigate that with something, you know, some other tribal members from out of state, a lot of out of state interest, tribal interests, are giving one perspective. Those in the state are giving a very different perspective. That makes it a challenging issue for the state to address.
Thank you. Should we move on? All right.
I just have to catch him on one figure here. He's somehow portrayed that Utah Navajos are different than national Navajos and that they don't want that. This is simply not true. We've seen many Navajos step up and say, there are 8 chapter houses. This is their local governing council in the state of Utah. 8 chapter houses. Only one opposes Bears Ears. The rest support. Navajo Nation as a whole supports this process. I think we have a pretty clear indication from the Navajo how they feel about this.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Good evening. Thanks to all for being here. My name is Dee. I'm a Summit County resident. I've been taking some notes as I've been listening to the comments, and there's one thing, I want to pull this down, but I'm afraid of making that sound again. Thank you. I feel like a kid on my tiptoes. There's something about the PLI as it stands right now. There's a desperation behind it, I feel, and one of the examples that I think that illustrates that is the desperation to designate a road. I suppose you're talking about the D roads, when you have to wrestle people who are dying to ask them whether it's a road or not. It's probably not a road anymore. Maybe it was a road a long time ago, but it's not anymore. The other thing I noted is that with respect, Mr. Snyder, you are talking to the citizens of Summit County. Our representatives spent a lot of time and effort putting a proposal together that was ignored. So when you talk about how arduous the process was for you, you have to remember you're talking to the people of Summit County that you ignored. The third thing that really concerns me is it's more of a national issue, and I'm very worried about how our country is at risk of fracturing. This idea that that seems to be gaining momentum is about states' rights, and I'm very concerned that our mentality as United States citizens is fracturing in a way that could lead to some dire consequences. And I feel like initiatives like the PLI, sometimes the people who are in these counties are more for states' rights and rather than having the federal government come in and tell them what they're going to do with their land. It's federal land. It's federal land, right? And I just want to ask you both, Mr. Stewart, Mr. Snyder, could you please keep that in mind as you are possibly fueling this fracturing of our country? The last thing that I wanted to ask is that I'm curious about Mr. Snyder. I feel like the comments that you've made tonight it seems like Congressman Bishop's office is coming from a place of it seems like you're victimized in this process somehow, and I was wondering, do you really feel that way? Have you been treated poorly through this process? I don't, it might sound like a I don't mean for that to sound snarky, but that's what I've been hearing a lot from you in your comments.
Okay, where are we going to start with that? Casey, it sounds like you're...
I thought David wanted to answer these for me.
That's one of my old ploys.
So I want to address a few things which I don't think are fair. I don't think it's fair to say that our office or the PLI has ignored the wishes of Summit County. Are there discrepancies in this first draft between what was rolled out in a process here and what's in this draft? Yes. I think we recognize that. And if you talk to any of your county councilmen or women or any of their staff, we've worked to address those. Those oversights were oversights on our part that we readily admit, but it was part of combining seven diverse and very different counties into one draft. So, for example, in Summit County, you had special management areas and watershed management areas with a list of about four or five bullet points each of what you generally like to see in those areas. Now, in Grand County, we had watershed management areas, which were completely different. In Uinta County, you had watershed management areas, which were completely different, plus special management areas, which were completely different. So for the purposes of drafting, we lumped things into a special management area, you're right, to move forward into this next process. But I assure you, and I dare say the folks that we've worked with in this county can attest, that we've worked to get to the specific details and make this better. Now, also within the Summit County proposal, there were sections within there that said, we agree to agree after the agreement. I don't know how to draft that. And so what we've attempted to do is come back to that, say, what did you mean? What did you feel? And it's, look, this these things take time, which, again, why this is a draft. Now, if the concerns are in a final bill with an HR number that's moving through a congressional process, ignores, and is missing pieces of Summit County, then it's fair to have very strong and very poignant criticisms. But at this stage in the game, we are still working through this process. Now, back to the latter comment, and I've got a minute, right? Okay. I probably feel woe is me, but I don't think our office feels mistreated. I feel like we knew what we were getting into when we stepped into this. My boss said on the first day that all PLI is likely to do is make everybody equally unhappy. I dare say we mission accomplished. Going forward, we are committed to taking this to the next step, to moving forward. But what we will not stand, which is what I hope I was calling out this evening, is a process that takes away from a collaborative effort that hopefully brings divergent folks together and instead inserting politics into the discussion. PLI cannot move forward if people are saying, I must kill it so I get everything I want. There is no path forward for this initiative if that is the approach of members who heretofore we have worked very well with. So those are my comments.
Let me interject one thing. As a member of the county council, I agree with what Casey said with respect to the congressman's staff involvement with us. If the PLI were solely revolving around Summit County, I'm confident that we could come up with a consensus bill. That we're not the problem here in Summit County. If there is one, it lies in the other six. Okay, does anybody else want to tackle what...
Well, I think you raise a fascinating question and a dilemma for us as well. And that part of your question was, you know, you castigate the delegation for not adhering to the county proposal, which I think is a fair criticism, and I think Casey's addressed it fairly. But then, so imagine this, in San Juan County, their citizens are telling them the same thing, saying, okay, we want our county proposal to be recognized in Congress as is. Why should you guys make any changes to it? That's the challenge. So, you know, David, I think we need to clearly call out what David has suggested. He has said we should ignore the county proposals, we should ignore the county process, because these are federal lands. Again, there's a challenge there. Again, and that's where this is why it takes time. This is why it's difficult. I think that the PLI draft is one that is trying to balance county proposals, national interests, environmental interests, and the very fact that the bill is going through Congress, that's where the federal land question is addressed. It's going through Congress. It's not going through the state legislature. It's going through Congress. So the national, the public will have its ability to weigh in on the PLI through the votes in Congress. So again, you know, even if we once we have the PLI bill done in its final form, there's going to be amendments. There's going to be changes through the congressional process. We recognize that. We're trying to minimize that as much as possible so that we know what they are. But again, I think you've identified one of the challenges. People here want us to reflect the views of their locally elected officials at the same time take into consideration the other stakeholders in the process.
Okay, David's hackles are up a little bit.
Going to elicit presidential debate rules and call for an opportunity to respond to this critique. There is a big difference between Summit County and the other counties. Summit County, as I said, brought together ranchers from Wyoming. It brought together environmentalists from Summit County, from Salt Lake County, from outside of Utah across the country. With that diverse group, Summit County reached a consensus. San Juan County, there's a very different process. Again, San Juan County said, if you're not from my county, I don't care what you have to say. In my mind, those are very different, and I think it's fair to treat those differently and say, yes, Summit County's proposal should be honored because they've done the hard work. Summit County didn't do the hard work, and Summit County said, we don't listen to people. Sorry, San Juan County, thank you. Yeah, San Juan County. Sorry, Summit County. So I think those are very different, and that's why I've said this.
Okay. Juan and then John.
Comment on this topic. One of the suggestions that I have on the Public Lands Initiative is that when the working draft was released, in my view, and I'm just telling you my opinion, is that it didn't lay out the steps for resolution. What is the redress process for some of these issues? My suggestion to Casey, Dakota, and others is lay out what are the next steps. When is the next meeting? What date? Who are the people that need to be in that meeting? How is it that we're going to have that conversation? That is a whole subject of redress for these concerns. And I think that a lot of these discussions might be mitigated by laying out that trip, those mileposts. How are we going to do that? When are we going to do that? And so that's my suggestion. I can tell you from my own personal experience, I was there on day one that PLI was discussed. In fact, I got a phone call from Mr. Bishop and said, I'm thinking about doing this. This is not a hypothetical conversation for me. I was there on that very day. And for a while, I was kept, sort of knowing what was going on. But eventually, it waned down. I don't know what happened to it. And so I think that for me, I repeat myself right now, the PLI, I think, is a good approach to resolving some very thorny issues. It is in the right place, which is the Congress, where all these land issues have been resolved. But we lack a defined, well-agreed-to process to resolve very difficult conversations. We're going to have some good shouting matches. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But we're going to have to, at the other end, have a good resolution to that. That's what's missing for me.
John.
I'd like to pick up on a part of your comment. You drew a distinction between B roads and D roads. And for those of you that aren't immersed in RS 2477, B roads are county-maintained roads. They're graded, they're bladed, they're graveled. D roads are unmaintained roads. Now, if we look at the state's RS 2477 litigation, it's claiming title to B as well as D roads. And in the PLI, that would quiet title to all of those litigated roads, B and D alike, in the counties and in the state. Now, in the spirit of compromise, I would recommend or suggest that the delegation consider quieting title in all B roads in the state and the county, roads that the counties have been concerned about enough to maintain, but that the counties give up claims to D roads, those roads that have not been maintained and have not been used. It's not going to make everybody happy. There's certainly going to be some people that are quite upset, but in the spirit of compromise, I think it would cut through probably 80 to 90% of the road debate.
Okay, Casey.
Well, I want to at least let you know where our head was when we came with what we got to initially. We didn't want to tackle the RS 2477 issue at all because it is so complex and so complicated and controversial. But it was at the request of my good friend David Garbett here that we include those provisions within the PLI. Now, the PLI provisions related to roads thus far stipulates that it's all B roads and D roads not in areas designated for conservation. The attempt being that in the conversations that we had had, it was all the counties would, the environmental groups were largely okay with about all of the B roads and 70 to 80% of the D roads. Now, a rough math and a rough guess was what we attempted to accomplish. You better back up that figure because you've given it to me before. So, but I say that was our attempt. Is it perfect? No. In fact, we have counties that hate that language, that feel that they are getting nothing on B or D roads through PLI through that provision. So again, yes, it's one of the things that's up for discussion, and I would be very surprised if no alterations are made to that section.
Okay, David.
Presidential debate rules again. I want to clarify. Yes, SUA did propose that we address RS-2477 issues. And again, if this is sounding esoteric to you, really what this is all about is for counties, RS-2477 rights of way are about stopping wilderness and about asserting additional control over federal lands. They might tell you it's otherwise, but that's really the driver here. Now, we came in with a proposal where we said there needs to be a give and take. I like John's idea. I would accept that one. But we actually, I think, made an even more generous proposal to the counties. The problem was, and what we're not seeing in the PLI, is that there had to be a give from the counties. And what the PLI does is it basically gives the counties and the state 70 to 80% of the routes they want, and then it allows them to continue pursuing in litigation the remainder. What we said is give them a fair share, 70 to 80% of the routes, but then they are prohibited from ever seeking any of these other routes in litigation. So all this has done is make their job a lot easier, and they don't have to give anything.
And that sounds like a great thing, but it's sort of reminiscent of their request not to allow the Antiquities Act to be used again. I mean, it sounds like the reciprocal of that a little bit, just saying, so to speak.
Well, the other possibility for them is to continue attempting to litigate these roads over the next 100 years.
I understand. We are taking too long. We have 17 minutes. We got all these questioners.
I've got some comments and a question. My name is Charmian Wright. I was born in Salt Lake City, and I grew up thinking the whole world was like the American West. My parents moved out here from Illinois because there was not enough, before I was born, because there was not enough recreational opportunity in Chicago. So imagine my surprise when I started traveling, grew up and started traveling, and I found out that what we have in the American West is incredibly extraordinary. I've traveled in 48 states and a good 48 states and a good part of the world. What we have here is so rare, and it's so extraordinary, and it's such an incredible treasure. We're so immersed in beauty here that we take it for granted. We just think it's everywhere, and it's not. So my question to you, I think of what I call the Yellowstone test. Almost 150 years ago, they designated Yellowstone. Now, almost 150 years later, do we look back and say, gosh, you know, these guys really worked hard to meet a consensus, and maybe they should have been able to continue to develop in that area? Or do we look back and say, these people were true visionaries that set aside Yellowstone? Almost 150 years later, you know, what are we saying about the people that designated Yellowstone? Now, if we look at the true value of these lands, these have been great comments from everybody, but Mr. Palma has said two things that were the most significant to take away. And one is your children and their children and their children. And the other one is, what's the true value of these lands? If we were to put a price on these lands, and put a price on these lands not just for our generation, Yellowstone test, 150 years from now, every generation, ours, the next, the next, the next. And that's just the start in 150 years from now. If we were to consider the value of these lands, the scarcity of them, when we look at the 30,000-foot view, the scarcity of these lands. And if we were to consider the value of these lands generation after generation after generation after generation, would this PLI pass the Yellowstone test?
We're going to have two respondents to that question, Cody and David.
It's a great question. I agree, Juan made some compelling arguments about the importance of thinking long term. I guess two quick responses. One, it's impossible to answer that question without taking into context where we are today. If you look at the amount of lands in the state of Utah, 54 million acres, I've seen numbers, and Juan can maybe give me the precise numbers, but around 10 to 11 million of the acres in Utah already are under some sort of conservation status. We have five national parks, you know, multiple national monuments, other conservation areas. We have a lot of land that is conserved. I've actually seen a report that said that there are more lands in the state of Utah that are under conservation status than are private lands. So it's not a question of should lands be conserved. It's a question of which lands should be preserved and how much. You know, what's the appropriate level? Should half the state, 80% of the state, 20% of the state? That's where this discussion arises. Again, how much of the land? I think that, again, right now we've identified most of the areas that truly deserve protection. We're just trying Governor Herbert has always said his goal with the PLI is let's conserve the lands that need to be conserved and also develop the lands that are best developed. You know, there are areas where it makes sense to develop there. Let's try to find that appropriate balance. People will never reach the same precise ratio. I think we'll all have different ideas about what that ratio where we should land. But I think we all recognize that there are areas that should be conserved, there are areas that should be developed.
David.
I don't think the PLI passes the Yellowstone test. And I actually want to take your Yellowstone test and apply it to Bears Ears National Monument and the use of the Antiquities Act. I think that's a great example that you brought up. These objections that we're hearing about the use of the Antiquities Act and protection of Bears Ears National Monument are the same sorts of objections that people raised to Capitol Reef before it was set aside as a national monument by a president using antiquities authority. These are the same sort of objections that we heard to Grand Canyon before it was set aside as a national monument by a president using antiquities authority. And the list goes on. Arches, Zion, Bryce, Grand Teton. And without fail, we always look back and say, that was a really good idea. And I think Bears Ears will be no different. There might be some opposition at the time that it's designated, some unpopularity, but down the road in the future, people will be saying the same thing. What a great treasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, panelists, for being here today. I appreciate your time and all the work you've put in today and leading up to this point. I think that David and Casey have a wonderful dynamic up here. I hope so. They've got all the money, right? I've got a couple things. One is a technical thing for Casey. You guys have a great interactive map on the website. The one thing it's still lacking is maps of your opportunity provisions. So the road right-of-ways, energy areas, they're just not there, and I think it would lend a lot of credibility to the process to have that up there. Personally, I'm excited for the PLI and what it could accomplish. Right now, I can't support it in its present form, and I'm wondering if you can lay out for us, the people that are hopeful, want to participate, what is the process moving forward from here? Give us your vision. If you can speak to that, Casey, and then if David, you can speak to what your vision might be for the ideal process from your perspective or any of the other panelists.
Sure. So to your first point, I think it's completely fair and legitimate, and it is something that needs to be addressed in a more interactive way so that people don't have this sense that we're playing hide the ball. That was not the intention. I'm sorry that it's been made to feel that way. It is a host of missteps that maybe if we could have done differently, we would have. but I think going forward, we will make a
a stronger effort to identify those things so people know exactly what's being lined out. But some of these issues were so complex, wading into them on an expedited time frame was difficult, but fair point. No, RGIS guy's a rock star. He's so good, but it's the people who give him the maps that have problems, like me. Going forward, you know, we have a host of comments that are substantive and technical and that we are more than willing and happy to apply moving forward. We got a lot of comments which were, this is the end of the world, you're destroying the planet, or you just sold the farm, I hate wilderness. I don't know how to apply that to legislation. You know, put a frowny face or a smiley face on the side. You know, there's just no way to address that. But going forward, there is a host of people who sent us substantive technical corrections that said, you know, if you look at Title I, Section 101, if you change this word, this line, you would make it better. We would feel more comfortable. We would like to see that happen. And I have pages and reams of that sort of stuff. And that's what we're kind of running through right now and seeing, all right, where are people lining up? What is this looking like? What's going to happen? And I can guarantee you that the next round of PLI will not look like this one because we do have these sort of technical corrections and these sort of technical ideas. This was our first step. This is 3 years. This is what it's going to look like. Going forward, though, our intention is to work with the people who want to work with us. We have never compelled anyone, counties or environmental interests, to work on the PLI. And we will not do so going forward to the next step. So there are many groups that maybe want to bring this down for certain reasons, but there are many that aren't. And I could list you line after line of those groups. And we will listen to them, and we will bring them into the room, and we will move forward through the next part of this process. At some point, there will be a final bill, and you can love it and hate it, and that's the time to run commercials or to have, you know, big press conferences, come up with cute little songs. But at this stage in the game, we're still trying to fix it. We're still trying to work through it. And I hope people will take us up on our offer of working to the next step on this.
Do you want to touch that one?
Sure. I'll just talk about what I see as a process for moving forward. One, I think Bears Ears National Monument, as I said, and I've said multiple times, I think they missed the boat in San Juan County. The president should act. For the other counties, Summit County has put together a good proposal. I think the delegation should move forward on that. I'd like to see them keep their word on Daggett County and put that back in a bill. Emory and Grand counties are two places where I think the conservation community and some of these counties are not as far apart as in other places. And I would, you know, I'd love to have Casey once again returning my phone calls and that we could have discussions about this. And I'd like to spend a lot of time with him again. I think it's possible for us to work through these issues. Again, Grand and Emory County would be the areas that I would highlight to see if we can't tackle some of the really big public land counties.
Thank you. Next question.
Hello. Thank you all for being here. I'm Lisa Yoder. I'm a resident of Summit County. I appreciate the great amount of work all of you and the council has put into this initiative. What I noticed in the conversation is a willingness to negotiate and compromise. But what I'm curious about is why designation of a national monument is a line in the sand where all negotiation stops. Could we not move forward? That's the challenge. Could the initiative move forward in compromise, whether it's a national monument or it's a conservation area in the Bears Ears?
Okay. Cody, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I know I made that very blunt, direct statement, and I'm not trying to be controversial or create an issue where there doesn't exist, but I'm just trying to tell you what I've heard from these counties, is that they will, and I get it. I mean, if they're told, okay, do what we want you to do, or if not, we'll force it upon you, that's how they feel this negotiation is headed in that direction. If they have that threat of a monument hanging over their head, they don't feel like they can negotiate in good faith. What leverage do they have? They have absolutely zero leverage if they say, okay, you make these changes, you expand the boundaries here, or if not, we're going to go to the president and ask him to designate a national monument. In that context, there is no... There's not any goodwill, there's not any good faith, there's not an ability for people to actually have a good faith discussion. So what they've said is, again, we're done. We will not trust the process, we will not trust the president, we won't trust Congress. You can't protect us unless we get some sort of guarantee that we go through this process of negotiation and then you're going to reverse it all with a monument over the top of it.
John had a comment.
If President Obama creates the Bears Ears National Monument, within that external boundary, that 1.9 million acre bubble, there's a pretty large amount of state land, sitla land, that falls within that area. That's about 154,000 acres, something like that. That land, it's in the state's interest and it's in the federal interest to trade those sitla in holdings for lands that can be developed in other parts of the state. It's exactly the model we went through following the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. And it was, rather than viewing the monument designation as the end of the process, it became the starting point for a very expansive exchange that resolved not just those inholdings within Grand Staircase, but inholdings within Indian reservations, within national forests, within national parks, and gave us a handle to address a much larger problem. So even if a monument proclamation moves forward, and even if it has a chilling effect on the counties, I think it's an opportunity for the state, an opportunity for sitla to engage very effectively and do something which is in both the state's interest and in federal interest, and that may be a way to kind of log roll and keep that process moving, and hopefully we can use that to capture some of the effort and the energy and the hard work that's already gone into the PLI.
I think John's correct. In that, after the Grand Staircase, there were the sitla exchanges, but there was no additional wilderness created as a result of that process. I'm saying if you want additional conservation for the conservation community, if you want these other counties to be willing to continue to be at the table, they can't have this sword of Damocles hanging over their head at any moment that's going to drop, where they say, again, do what we say, make these accommodations, or else we're going to go to somewhere else, to force it upon you.
Okay. I just want to chime in on this. I don't think that is totally accurate of the counties that I've encountered. So, for example, Grand County, in their recommendation to Representative Bishop, specifically said, do not remove the President's Antiquities Act authority. We know that officials from Emory County have contacted the delegation and said, don't include that in the bill because we know the President will never sign a bill that removes Antiquities Act authority. Summit County didn't ask for that. I really don't think that that's a true narrative for all of the counties. Not all of them think this way. You know, the one example they use of why we need to do away with this authority is taken from Nevada, where Senator Harry Reid passed a wilderness bill in one particular county and then later on came back to the President and said, President, will you designate a monument in this county? Well, if Senator Lee wants to come back and ask for a monument in a county where he designates wilderness, I think people will be, one, very shocked. But he probably would have the county's support before he did this. I mean, these are just not examples that apply to this situation.
Okay. So we are down to our last couple of minutes. I'm sorry, our last two questioners are not going to get their chance. I think if I were to bring my laptop in here and we were to have David buy us all dinner first, we could rewrite this bill and have it done by morning. But I don't think we're going to do that tonight. Although it would be fun trying. I think I'd like each of you to take 10 or 15 seconds or 30 seconds and just give your parting advice, comment, commendation, whatever you'd like. We'll start here with you, John.
I think I'd close by going back to where I started, that these are public lands. They belong to all Americans. That's not my opinion. That's a settled matter of law set forth by the U.S. Supreme Court. So thus far, there have been very positive opportunities for residents of the seven counties that are part of the PLI to engage and to work very closely with the delegation. As you move out of those seven counties, it's become more difficult. And if you are outside of the state of Utah, it's more difficult still. I think it's important that we fall back and we remember that these are public lands and we make sure that there are opportunities for all of the public to engage moving forward.
Thank you. Cody.
I would just conclude by saying, as I stated at the beginning, I think the PLI presents us with a great opportunity to actually bring some resolution to these longstanding conflicts. And it would be a shame if we retreated back to the trenches and engaged in the same sort of warfare and bombastic, caustic comments that we've seen in the past. I hope we avoid that and we stick with this process. And again, recognize it's going to take some time. It's going to require negotiation and compromise, but I think it's worthwhile. I think that the result, if we can actually reach consensus at the end of that process, it will have been worthwhile.
Thank you. Juan?
Well, thank you, everybody, for staying this late. I appreciate it. America's public lands, for me, have been a true inspiration in my life. From a migrant kid picking crops in the Sacramento Valley and looking up at the eastern Sierra Nevada and wondering if that was heaven was like as a 12-year-old boy picking tomatoes in that valley, and then coming back at 40 years old and managing all those forests in the Lake Tahoe region is indeed an inspirational thing for me. And I want America's public lands to be there for my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. And we in the Hispanic community have a voice to say about this public lands. And you can ignore us if you want to. You certainly have up to this point in time in a lot of cases. But there's going to be several of us that are going to simply not be quiet anymore. And that's going to pose a challenge to some of the folks. And I think the same is true for the Native American community as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Juan. David.
My parting words are, after the designation of Bears Ears National Monument by the President, I look forward to working with Juan, Casey, and Cody in a process facilitated by John Ruppel to work out public lands issues in the remaining counties in the PLI area.
Thank you, David. Casey.
Seriously? Maybe I should send it back.
Compromise is hard. And these processes are hard. And it's a cliche to say if it was easy, it had already been done. But literally, this hasn't ever been done because it is hard and it is not easy. If people are willing to stay honest and work at this and realize that every perspective is valid, we can accomplish something and solve these problems. If people are going to instead be satisfied with getting what they want today at the expense of tomorrow, there will be no finality and only a continuation of conflict. I'm hopeful we can resolve these issues. I'm hopeful there is no monument designation because I am scared for the future that comes with it, but time will tell. So thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you. Let's give it up for our panel. We're out of time. We want to thank you all for coming. We want to thank Reverend Charles Robinson and the St. Luke's Episcopal Church for hosting us tonight, and Summit Land Conservancy for sponsoring this broadcast. It'll be available in its entirety as a podcast tomorrow at KPCW's website, which is kpcw.org. Thank you, and good night.